Winning a battle is more than just shooting enemy soldiers. It's about saving your own.
Misha finds puns unbearable. This is Core.
What in the hell is a warrior anyway? And how should they be considered when you're, building a composition? When you're trying to build a strong team? What do you look for in a warrior? Communities define them as tanks. They call them tanks. People like Johanna, Meriden, Leoric, for good examples. Or bruisers like Sonya, Tyriel, Arthas. And whatever the hell Rexxar is. Still not sure what Rexxar is. But what truly defines a warrior? What is it about them that we need? Do we need them? Can it be all assassins? Can it be all specialists? Why can't specialists be tanks? Why can't tanks be specialists? Why can't an assassin be a tank? What about a little way to make all that stuff kind of homogenized together? Or is that a terrible idea? I'm Scott Johnson with Beau Schwartz and John Jagger, and we're talking about warriors. John, you love Johanna. You want to marry her.
All of this is true.
Maybe you don't love her that much. But what is it? We barely touched on this last week, but team comps, a strong team comp is considered a team with smart warrior usage. And when you pick Johanna, there's an assumption on your part that people are going to file in behind you. You're going to take the damage. Healer's going to keep you alive. You're going to be the brunt of the attack. But does it have to be that way?
I don't think it necessarily has to be. I mean, I think if you're playing Johanna, that's definitely playing to the character's strength.
Right.
Her ability to get in there and soak up a bunch of damage and basically be this big shield for everybody is really, really nice. But, as we watch these tournaments that are going on and we see what is the meta for other areas, we see that it's not always the same. It's not everybody saying, well, you need Johanna and Leoric. Those are the two.
Yeah.
We see more popularity with characters like Arthas and Tyriel. And so there's obviously a play style element to it. And I think that's what defining what a warrior should be is tricky.
I mean, does it always boil down though to meta, Beau? If you're trying to build a strong team, is it just an accepted practice that we got to go to some website and go, all right, well, what are the top teams saying? Oh, okay, well, it's him and him and him and him.
Yeah, it feels like a team comp, there's a certain paradigm. There's a few different paradigms that people inherently understand with minimal conversation, and they often involve one or more warriors. And specifically, I think why you're seeing more than some compositions do the double tank thing is because one warrior really serves that stun utility, and the other one has a damage trade-off with a slow, and so they're protecting the backline. But I've played several games, of Heroes of late where the opposite team drafts, the double tank, the Johanna and the Leoric, and you're going, oh boy, we're gonna lose, and we end up winning, and our tank is like Sonya, and yes, everyone's crying and complaining in draft, but then we end up turning things around. So I think. Warrior to me is like it's about fighting melee style, and it doesn't matter whether that's a tanky warrior or a fury warrior in World of Warcraft who's just in there to get in as much damage as you can. So I think the classification system in Heroes is somewhat misleading, I think, when we talk about the classifications for a team composition. Yeah, because there are champs like Tyriel and Sonya where you can see that the team is not playing well together because half the team is not diving. Meanwhile, Tyriel's judgmenting into the back line and one other guy is in the back line and the other three are running away.
Yeah.
And I think these are causing problems in some matches.
Well, it's kind of like, you whip Johanna out in a solo queue and nobody knows what to do with her with the rest of your team. They don't know how to play with her or support her. That's kind of a miserable game because you're just taking a lot of damage and dying a lot and maybe dying slower than somebody else would. But because you're not getting that team play, she's maybe a terrible pick because you're having a bad time. So a fun way to play a solo queued quick match is to pick something weird and something that's just fun inherently, like Hammer or freaking, Leoric's pretty fun in his own way.
Chen is really fun.
Yeah.
You see a lot of frustration surrounding Chen, which is Chen doesn't, like, he can move quickly, but he's got to stand every now and then and take drinks. And what happens is if your team's not on the same page, they all run past you and they stop benefiting from having a tank, you know? So it can be very, people are not patient in the game. And Chen requires patience in striking at the right moment.
And family. But right. here's the problem that I see facing tanks. And then we're going to talk about what they're doing in upcoming stuff to tanks so that we can see what some of these changes might mean for the game. And some other pretty big sweeping changes to snowballing and some other stuff. We'll get to all of that. But the meta determining what the larger player base is doing drives me slightly crazy. Because what you end up having is a team who will sit up on a Saturday afternoon and watch some finals on Twitch and go, oh man, did you see the team they used? That must be the team we have to have. So hey, me and my four buddies from high school, we need to make this team and it needs to be this composition because that's what they're doing and they're winning, so there's no other way to be. So they choose that team. They do that in quick matches because they don't have to worry about draft and having players locked out. They can mirror match it. They don't care. And the minute you try to introduce something unique or different to it, like, I don't know, Sonya as your tank instead, everybody flips a lid and has a canary. And you end up winning anyway, or maybe it still goes to the other team, but everybody's so sure that the meta matters most. I don't like that in this game, or any game, really.
Yeah, I think that's two conversations. If you're going into five-man now, five-mans are paired up against five-man, so there shouldn't be anybody upset with you on your team if you're all on voice comms, right? Yeah. Or else you're not going to be friends with them much longer, probably.
Sure.
In solo queue for sure, like, everyone's got to be on the experimentation page, and you see this a lot. I had a match today. Well, I don't own Joanna. I don't own Leoric. I don't own this other support. I'm like, what do you own? And it's this character everyone's upset with. Like, it's Gazlo. Nobody wants a first pick Gazlo. And that's the thing, is that we do invite people who don't own all the characters into play the game. Should they own all the characters? I don't think so. But there are maps where there is a clear win rate advantage. Infernal Shrines right now, taking Leoric and taking Joanna for your team in a draft is almost an auto win. And they're getting nerfed, so that may no longer be true come Tuesday.
Yeah.
But they are the meta because you have like greater odds of winning that match, like significantly greater odds of winning that match.
To turn kind of what Scott's saying and what you're saying a little bit on its head and maybe put an oddly positive spin on it. I agree that, you know, players looking at the meta and saying, well, that's what we need to do is frustrating. But a lot of it is this idea of the path of least resistance. A lot of people play this game either by themselves or maybe with only one or two other people where you don't have a lot of control or communication to coordinate with other people. Yeah. And I think a lot of what happens is you see characters become very popular who don't require a high level of coordination to pull off some amazing moves. And sometimes if somebody goes and watches, you know, a live stream and the pros playing, they get an idea of how to use these moves in a team-oriented fashion.
Yeah.
And I think that causes everybody to say, oh, I get it. Now I understand why Tyrande is a cool hero. Now I get it. I didn't get it before, but now I get it. And we all kind of have this common base to build upon with our skills and our abilities and all of that. And all of a sudden, she makes her way back in.
Yeah. Yeah, and she was hated the week before, and everybody was talking smack about her, or it could be, you know, Tassadar always gets a lot of heat for this. Like, you never see him in the pro matches anymore, so that means he's garbage. And he's not garbage, damn it. It's like this. It's like, look, if they could only launch space shuttles back when we were doing that, in perfect weather, We'd hardly ever get a damn space shuttle up, and we'd always try for the best space shuttle weather. Come on, you stay with me. This metaphor is pretty good. Okay, I'm going to have an end to it. They would go, all right, well, let's make an assessment here. How's the weather look? Or in our case, how's the team comp look? Well, it's a little weird because we got Asmodan and, Murky on the same team. That's a little weird for pushing lanes or whatever, or, you know, we don't have enough damage or something. But let's see what happens. And some of my favorite moments in this game are the ones where we let the weather be a little bit off, to continue the metaphor, and still pulled something out or found some crazy combination that we didn't even know via meta or any other way was a great combo. Like, who was it, Bo, the other day? You were playing Jim from Utah, Karazim, and you had him on a team with Uther, I think. Was it Uther? Uther and Karazim.
Oh, that was me. Yeah, that was me on Karazim and Geek Jock on Uther.
Yeah, and that combination of those two support classes plus just kind of the unique things each of them do was a riot, and it was fun to watch, and we won the game and surprised people that weren't, you know, I think we had maybe one guy who wasn't one of us, or, you know, it was just a stranger, single dude.
Not one of us.
And that's always really fun. So, John, to your point, I always struggle with this because all of us are, Bo always says tryhards. Everyone's a tryhard sometimes, you know? Meaning,
you're all tryhards.
Yeah. Everybody thinks they're going to be the next hot esports guy. It's like, you know, public basketball courts in the 80s. Everybody thought they were going to be the next Michael Jordan. And like two of them made it. And they're both on NBA teams now. But thousands tried. So I see that and I get realistic and I go, there's no way that our fun little team we have here, which is a pretty winning team when we play all the people on our team, there's no way we're never going to be that high echelon. We may come close and poke at it or do something fun like that, but it's never going to be that. So I'm just like, let's be as competitive as we can and have as much fun as we freaking can. But people who want to go so try hard and push so far into the meta and act like that is the Bible for them bugs me, because just like you said, John, next week they'll say something like, oh, Arthas is out, so-and-so is in. Even though really, Arthas isn't really out. You're just saying he's out.
Yeah, I think somebody finds some game-breaking aspect to him or some advantageous way to use him, and then he gets formed in our collective consciousness as something that you can do.
Right.
I think the argument for going meta picks when it comes to strangers is that it's taxing to say, listen, I play a great, I don't know, who's really unpopular right now? Like, seriously unpopular.
I feel like nobody's playing Diablo right now.
Yeah, okay. I play mean Diablo, best Diablo, and then everyone in your draft chat or, you know, in your game chat's like, oh, why did you pick Diablo? He's the worst.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, you might say, well, the world sucks, and you guys all suck, and you need to, like, open your minds and rail and, you know, lose your games because morale has dipped. Like, there's an argument to be made about working with the grain when you go into, let's say, Hero League more so than Quick Match.
Yeah.
To say, like, I'm just going to be amenable to the most popular play styles so that I can keep morale high, because morale is important. Like, when we go into games, we don't go... When we're like, well, I don't think we're going to win, we stand less chance of winning. We have to go in thinking, even when we're bad, we can do this, guys, you know, and have morale. Sure. And they had, one of the Cloud9 teams was interviewed, although this an esports thing, was one of the High from their League of Legends, he was being interviewed, and he says, even if I feel like they're better than me, every time I go in to shot call my matches, I have to believe I'm better than the other team. Mm. That's the only way I'm going to win. Otherwise, I break down and we lose.
Yeah.
And I think morale is really important. I think you can make an argument to say, follow the meta so that you can keep the morale of your teammates up, even if you know you're smarter than them and whatever.
Well, you did that yesterday. Arguably. You did that yesterday in a game where I will give you credit for it, because it was me and you and John and Eric and I can't remember, our fifth guy was like just a dude or something.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was Ralph. Ralph was in there. And not that it matters. These are names nobody knows. But anyway, we were playing and I thought we were losing. And I had kind of given up the ghost a little bit. And I was feeling like, well, we'll just sort of, you know, let's get our golden XP and move on to the next win or whatever. And you saw this windowed late game that just, I don't know, you could just tell your attitude was better than mine. I can't speak for everybody else, but you had this thing where it's like, all right, well, two, you know, we may not have ever gotten the dragon, but two good team fights and we win.
Yeah,
and you were totally right. We freaking creamed him in the end. Well, yeah, cream him, but
like late game, that's the one comeback mechanic you have that is really effective, no matter how snowbally the map is. if you can turn it around and win a team fight, right? Even when you're like, because there's, you see that often too, where it's like we're three levels down, you know, just sit in the base and do nothing. You still have to win the team fight. That's your only path to victory. Yep, you're at a disadvantage and your odds of winning are less.
Yeah.
But if you keep your composure and you get a good pick, you take out one of their dudes and all of a sudden everything goes your way. The comeback, the catch up XP is much greater. So you'll catch back up in XP as you're fighting.
Sure.
And then you capitalize on that opportunity and boom, there you go.
And then the whole night changes. Then you're like, you want to keep playing. You know, you were about to go to bed because you should have, because you're super sick, but you said, no, I'm going to play another game. I don't know. I'm not talking about anyone in particular here, but you might
illness
tell
of the storm.
Illness of the storm. So I want to do something real quick for fun, and then we'll move on to the actual changes coming to Warriors coming Tuesday, we assume, unless something changes. And that is this. John, I'll start with you. Design your worst possible five-man comp. What is the worst comp you could make with five characters in this game right now?
Oh, my gosh. And this is all... There's no rules.
No rules. No rules. And you and I have specifically the other day, you and I were playing just two of us, and we ran into an all-healer team. There have been times where we've all seen all-assassins teams. So even those are fair game. I'm just saying, like, what is the worst possible composition? And let's assume the players are good. They're just choosing the worst five characters possible. Who would it be?
So it's C9? C9 playing the worst team.
Zing. Okay. That's pretty good.
Okay, so I can do any combination. Doesn't have to follow any sort of rules.
No rules at all. You just give me what you got. And if you get every time you, well, I'll tell you, I'll play a sound if you're correct that it's a bad choice or not. So go.
Okay. It's kind of going to come together as a whole at the end, but Murky.
Got it. That's a good one.
Okay. Nova.
Good one.
Zeratul. I know he's a good hero, but in the comp I'm building here.
Okay. All right. Because also, so is Murky in the right comp. So we're going to allow that one. Okay.
Okay.
That's three. You got two more.
Let's see. Brightwing.
Yes. Hold on. There.
And let's see, how are we going to cap this all off?
Put ETC in there. No, maybe not, actually.
No, ETC might do okay.
Yeah, he's all right. I know he's not everyone's favorite right now, but
Rexxar.
And Rexxar.
Actually, shouldn't it just be the three Vikings every time, or the Lost Vikings?
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of the Vikings and the Lost Vikings.
Yeah, I keep forgetting they exist. Congratulations, you did it. You won that contest. Bo, give me yours. Worst five-man comp ever. Any different?
I would say Rexxar, Lost Vikings. Probably put Brightwing, Lili, and Uther to round out the team.
Oh gosh, yeah. See, I would like to face that team. You guys.
Oh, you know what? I would have put Abathur in place of my Lost Vikings. Oh, even okay. Though Abathur and Murky is a good combo.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I think on a team of stealthies, that Abathur not being a part of the fights at all is going to be a pain in the butt.
Yeah, he's not. The rest of that team is not helping their plight. That's for sure.
The key is no hero damage.
Yeah. That is the key.
That's the lowest hero damage people, because eventually you do have to fight.
So. How about five Johannas? Because she puts out no damage.
You're describing heaven.
It would turn like them into a dance floor with all the condemns going off all the time.
Yeah.
They'd be stunned, chain stunned. That would actually probably be really good.
Like a mosh pit with everybody flapping around. All right, so let's talk about some of these changes, and you guys can help better explain some of these, because some of them I'm not your go-to warrior ever. I'm usually assassin or specialist or sometimes healer. But Johanna's minion wave clear with knight takes pawn trait tuned down a bit. What was wrong with it? Why'd they tune it down?
And specifically, it's really good on infernal shrines, but it's good everywhere. It's just, I think the identity, we talk about what are warriors and what are tanks. It's like you have these tanks in Leoric and in Johanna that are also good wave clearing. And I think there's room to have a hero have an identity to be good against minions.
Yeah.
And then you have a tank. So they're tuning it down because it's obnoxious. And she can't both be a great tank and then have great wave clear.
Okay, that's good. Blessed Shield nerf so that the most powerful stun hits the first target and stun duration decreases for each subsequent target hit. Currently, isn't that same duration?
It's the same. They've just lowered the numbers.
Oh, okay. I thought it was always everyone got stunned for the same amount, but you're saying it's always been targets behind.
It's, Yeah, it's being tuned down a tiny bit, but it's really powerful ultimate.
Okay. It's really one of those cases of, and this is a thing, if I had a pet peeve in the world of Heroes, this is it. Yeah. It is the, let's make the popular ultimate ability a little worse so that the other ultimate ability seems a little bit better.
And you'd prefer they go the other way and make the crummier one better.
Yes.
Like go upward, not downward.
Yeah, well, because the level 20 talent now for Blessed Shield just makes it what it was.
Yeah.
So Blessed they Shield nerfed it, and then they made the 20 talent undo the nerf.
Mm. And the shield is currently the best stun in the game, some say. I don't know if I agree with that.
It's a huge playmaker. Like, when I play Joanna, like, the goal is to get the Blessed Shield off at the right time. And then everyone else descends on the whole team and somebody's getting blown up if you've Blessed Shielded right. And Falling Sword does nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's basically
the problem.
It's pretty.
It does nothing. Yeah. It's almost on the level of Possession. I'm sorry. I know there's some Falling Sword fans out there, I'm sure. It does nothing. You should be taking. Everyone's expecting you to take Blessed Shield.
You know what I got? And I'll say this in regarding Diablo itself, Diablo 3, Falling Shield, or whatever the hell, what's it called now?
Falling Sword.
Falling Sword,
Shield.
Not Shield. Yeah. Falling Sword is not really all that great there either. Just saying. I know you can beef it up a little bit. There's some stuff and get some gear. But even in that game, that's not the best ability in the world. Leoric's Skeletal Swing has its damage reduced. And you know what? This is interesting, because you were talking about how specific maps are benefiting more from these nerfs than others. That's a unique problem Blizzard has. You know, with the exception of that weird King of the Hill thing that League of Legends does, but these other MOBAs don't really have this balance problem. They don't have to deal with the fact that, you know, one map is easier to clear a lane of minions with Leoric than another. They just have one map, one place to tune everybody, one place to patch and nerf and to buff and everything else. This is them saying, oh, shite, we have eight maps, right? That's where we're at right now, I think is eight. And and they've got to figure out how to make it so these characters are not only balanced against each other and against compositions, but they now have to make sure they're balanced against the arenas they're in. And that is exponential complication.
I think there will be a competitive rotation, like the maps that they're going to focus on eventually. Like, if we get to 30 maps, maybe 8 of the 30, they're all playable, but 8 of the 30 are the balanced, you know, ranked mode official maps that they tune for, so to speak. Right. I could see that happening. But yeah, it's a huge amount of complexity to be like, oh, we've got this great hero, feels great, but it's an auto win on this one map.
Mm-hmm.
And the skeletal swing.
Skeletal.
I looked it up, by the way. You can say skeletal swing.
Can you really?
And someone write in and tell me, because I'm pretty sure it's like a British thing or something where you can say skeletal or you can say skeletal and they're both correct.
Well, can say it, but just understand you're opening the door for scrutiny.
Yeah, my favorite member of the American judicial system, the one on the Supreme Court, my favorite is Justice Skeletal. He's fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, continue with your skeletal conversation.
Yeah, so the skeletal swing is a great dance among skeletons. And also it's obnoxious. You can go back and forth between lanes, like in Tomb of the Spider Queen, visit the lane, swing, go to another lane, swing, pick up your orb if you're doing that level one trade, go to another lane, swing. It does like about 90% damage to the minion wave.
Yeah.
It's really bad. So I think this is also a case of we want Leoric to be obnoxious as a bully tank.
Sure.
But not a great. You know, what's the point of having Sylvanas if you have Leoric on your team?
That's a good point. What's the point?
Sylvanas is awesome.
She's kind of awesome, yeah. That's the other thing, talking about roles. She's just too damagey. Yes, John, you're going
to
say.
It's a tough nerf, though. Because, I mean, they're both there to affect Leoric and Johanna's changes are there to affect wave clear. But Leoric's change is impacted no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Your skeletal swing is going to be damaged no matter what you do. Johanna's, it only affected a talent. And otherwise she's left unchanged besides her ult. So I'm very curious to see how Leoric is going to feel with this damage reduced, because when I play him, I play a very heavy build that focuses on buffing Skeletal Swing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very curious to see what this nerf is going to do for how he feels. And it's a little iffy for me right now. I always get nervous when my favorite abilities are getting nerfed.
Yeah, me too. I don't love it. And no one does when their characters of choice are getting tweaked with like this. But, you know, hopefully it doesn't overaffect the overall enjoyment of that character. Or, you know, at the very least, maybe it pushes you toward a build that you maybe enjoy as much. But yeah, they do run the risk of that, though, right? Like, they may turn you away. It may turn the meta away from it. It may do a lot of things to Leoric. He may just be a dick now. We don't know. Got to find out.
Maybe he'll be a dick.
Yeah, maybe. That, you never know when you change the numbers. You never know what's going to happen.
You really don't. Stitches takes a few steps to becoming more of an anti-mage style hero, which is interesting. New talents to greatly increase health pool and reduce ability damage from level 1. Gorge buffed a bit so it lasts longer and no longer reduces Stitch's movements when it comes to speed. So two things I see happening here. One, Stitches is also feels like one of those warriors that gets left out a lot. Don't see him very often, but when you do and when he's played well, he's a pretty good threat. These things make him more threatening, and I'll tell you, there's no greater threat to fight than a well-coordinated Kel'thas / Jaina problem. So why not have a warrior who's better equipped to handle those two?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I think his hook is already a very powerful ability. You could actually see a hook ability be like on a non-tank,
yeah.
You know, like a utility guy. Mm-hmm. So I think they're trying to find that balance between like this unkillable hunk of undead meat and, you know, because he needs to feel that way because right now it feels like he dies way too easily.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a long list of what they're improving, but basically they've said that they're positioning him as an anti-mage. So that level 1 trait that like reduces ability damage is pretty unique for him.
Yeah.
So you might see him picked up a little more when going up against those two.
From a purely aesthetic standpoint, though, my problem with Stitches and the reason I've never purchased him, and I have played him when he's been in the rotation, but the reason I don't really care for Stitches that much is he just is this big, naked, gray piece of meat. Now, again, purely aesthetic. When you go to do skin stuff on him, outside of his heroic, or not his heroic, his level 10, his master skin, the other stuff is pretty cool, but it's all goofy as shit. So it's like, I'm here in my waders with my floaties on, or here's one where I'm cooking an egg on this pan. Whee! Like they've gone completely nutsoid with him. And maybe there's no other way to take a big, decaying, disgusting, guts hanging out guy other than to have some light fun with him, right? Make him look like a baby, make him look like a chef, make him look like a serial killer, whatever. But he's never cool to me, so I have a really hard time caring about Stitches as a character I would want to play. It does not match my style at all.
You want, like, conservative Stitches.
Yeah, like, I want Stitches in, like, a lawyer's suit.
In a suit with a little tie and a briefcase on his weird third hand.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a great skin idea. I definitely get that one.
And then you're talking. And it's
Wall Street Stitches.
You might say, well, that's still goofy, Scott. Yeah, but it's... Oh, Wall Street Stitches, dude.
He's got a nice big watch.
All right.
He throws out his cell phone, or he's got a phone, maybe. I don't know.
I'm in.
Something with a cord.
I'm in.
He yells taxi whenever he hits somebody.
You could have his mount be an Uber ride or something.
He'd say, taxi!
Taxi! Diablo and ETC given very conservative bumps to bring up their power. That seems like good news for, again, two warriors that are not getting a lot of play right now. You can kind of just see this, though, right? The writing's on the wall. They are definitely putting effort into here. Well, I mean, look at this. I mean, Johanna and Leoric, the two most played tanks in the meta in win rates, are being debuffed, nerfed is the word that people use today. And Diablo and ETC and Butcher all getting bumps. So it's obvious what's happening. You never see those three guys. You always see the other two. Well, duh. They're giving them, you know, people a reason to play those characters, and they're in a very unique position here. Let's say you're playing Dota 2 and you're like, man, I'm sick of playing such and such character, or he's no good, or whatever. You don't have to, because you didn't pay money to have that character or gold. You just got to play the character because it's all aesthetics that you pay for in that game, and that's it. All characters are unlocked and ready to play. In this game, they've chosen to make it so that you either pay money or gold for characters to play them, and you either plunk down hard-earned 10k gold or hard-earned $10 of real-world money. You'd never want the player base to feel like the guy you just spent 10 bucks on sucks and you're never going to use him.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, everyone does need to feel competitive. And they're also free to play. So, you know, if someone's new to the game, comes in and tries it and plays all the characters that are really underpowered, they might be like, well, this game, I just lose at it all the time. I don't want to play it.
Yeah.
So
interesting. Yeah. Butcher and Abathur are getting minor incremental changes to fix some of their unintended effects. John, do we know what those effects are? What the hell was happening in there? Maybe choo-choo trains, was that an effect? Because that was stupid. Just take that out of there.
I don't know what the unintended... I mean, I know they go well together. Abathur with any melee hero goes well together.
It's not a combination. It's each of them have an unintended effect.
Yeah, I figured it was a combo as well. Like,
so for Abathur... Locust will no longer spawn as soon as the game begins. It waits until the first minion wave spawns.
Okay.
So, you know, it allows you to get in the position before the start of the game. And then I think it has to do with Relentless Onslaught for Butcher.
Oh, okay.
It's just going to work a little better.
So not them together so much as them up.
Them together is still good.
Yeah, them to the, they're, well, I mean, Abathur, I've yet to see anything where Abathur and another guy aren't a solid team. I mean, I'm sure there's examples of this. Like, you wouldn't put Abathur and... I don't know, Tassadar together, probably.
No, I mean, you ideally, the strategy is to put him on a melee character or on an auto-attack champ like Rainer or Vala. You see that sometimes, but no, he's no good from range.
Yeah, because you're mostly buffing health and damage, but mostly, I mean, you're mostly keeping him up longer. He's a stronger, better, more lasting character if you've got a hat
Depends
on
the build, too. If you're going for a hat build, that's one thing. You could also just go for the I'm a lane bully build where you push in the lane.
I don't have any problem admitting that I'm still terrified to play him. I've never done it. Abathur scares the crap out of me.
Just play him in an AI game when he's free, if he ever goes free.
Gosh. Abathur is one of the two heroes I don't own in the game.
Really? But yeah, you've played with him though, right? You messed with him a little bit?
Mm-mm. I don't think I've played a single game.
Oh, wow. I guess what I'm looking for is some commiseration here. Do you find him intimidating? Just the mere fact that he's a dude that hides in the bushes and pokes everybody from afar kind of deal?
Yeah, it's a playstyle that I think I need to experience before, I don't know, it just doesn't gel with what my idea of fun in that game is.
Yeah.
I'm always in MMOs and everything, I want to be the guy that's up in the business, which is probably why I gravitate towards warriors and specialists in this game, because they're real good at being up in the business.
Yeah.
But Abathur just kind of hanging out in the back doing things. It's just not where I typically play, but I have a feeling I would really like him if I tried him. The other hero I haven't picked up, I don't think I would like at all.
If it's the three Viking or the Lost Vikings, I'm going to be with you right there.
It is exactly the Lost Vikings.
And I did play that a little in a test thing, right? And decided F this is what I decided. I don't like those guys at all. Like the old game, but I don't like them in here. I never see them. They rarely get picked. Even when they're on free rotation, it's like this super rare thing. They're never in the meta. F those guys. F those guys. I hope you didn't spend money on those guys. That's all I'm saying to whoever bought that. Damn Lost Vikings.
I will say Lost Vikings are difficult, just plain difficult, if that's not how you want to play. But Abathur, it's easy to learn, hard to master. So if you get in, like, it'll be easy to play him.
Right.
And he's good to play when you're feeling, like, relaxed. Like, you want to play heroes, but you don't want to play something that gives you, you know, enables your carpal tunnel syndrome or arthritis or something.
Yeah.
You can play him pretty casually. So.
Well, my favorite Abathur time was early in the game's post-alpha life cycle and Eric choosing Abathur and then curling up into a ball somewhere and other players who've never played the game yelling at him the entire match because he was just sitting there. That was pretty good. Those are good times. All right, so Bo, finally here, when it comes to warriors, Chen is becoming more brew efficient. That must make you happy. So explain what that means, because when I play with you and you're playing Chen, and I've never played Chen, you'll stand in the fray and just drink a bunch of beer and not move and do things. And is that getting more efficient, or what is happening?
So brew. When you drink brew, it does two things. It builds up your brew, which is kind of like a rage meter, but it's an alcoholism meter. and the other thing it does is it generates shields. So if like Vala is auto attacking me or Rainer, I can just drink and they'll never damage me 1v1 because I'll generate shields faster than they'll shoot me.
Yeah.
So I'm doing both. I'm impervious to damage basically, and also building up my brew, and stuff you do costs brew. So what you find happens is you usually have enough brew if you don't buff it up for one rotation plus one ability. So that's like a jump kick, a keg, breathe fire, maybe get another keg, and then you got a drink. So when you're chasing people down, it's super frustrating to run out of brew because then you've got to stop running and drink. Meanwhile, Vala with two health is running away and you'll never catch her.
Right, right.
So I think it's going to take less time to drink. Things are going to cost less brew. You're going to gain even more shields while drinking because if you get interrupted, it does sort of mess up your flow.
Yeah.
And the ultimates don't cost brew, which is a big deal because that rotation I just described takes a lot of your brew. And then so it's kind of frustrating to use your rotation and be like, okay, time to split into three little panda dudes. And you can't. So I've got a drink. And then I get interrupted. I got to wait 5 seconds. And there's going to be a trait that the drinking cooldown goes to three. So overall, I think he might become a much more viable pick at higher levels as a main tank rather than as like a second tank.
Yeah, he's already a fun tank. We know that from what
I love playing with him. It's the funnest thing in the world to watch people shoot you and try to kill you.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they're like, why isn't this person dying? And instead of running away and giving up, they keep trying to kill you. And then your buddy shows up, roots them, and then you all beat them up.
Yeah.
And
it's also, you know, I don't have little kids anymore, but when they were tiny, it would be hard for me to explain to them that children, drinking alcohol protects you from people killing you. Anyway.
If a guy comes at you, just stop and open a beer and sit there and drink until they get bored and go away.
That's right.
It definitely makes you better at fighting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Well, you're less inhibited, right? And you got like kind of a numbness going on. So you got that. Well, that's good. I think more brew efficiency is probably good for him. And he's also receiving bumps and over power to his three basic abilities, which you kind of alluded to. So that's good. So that's Warriors Tuesday, man. There's big stuff happening to all those guys. I was dying last week to talk about this, and we ran out of time, so we didn't get a chance to. But there's some talk based on a tweet from Dustin Browder, where he answered a question that went like this. It says, somebody asked him, somebody named War Tortle. I don't like
the Pokemon?
Yeah, I guess so. Is that a Pokemon? I don't even know. Is it?
I think so.
John, you got to catch them all, buddy. Keep going.
You got to. I'm working on it.
Is a map editor / clan feature still on the list of things to implement in Heroes? And that question indicates that they were on the list to begin with, which I didn't know. But Dustin Browder's answer was yes. No ETA at this time, but we do want to get to it. Could be a while. So nothing soon or nothing early. But I wanted to talk about what a map editor might do to this game. Both certainly, you know, I don't know what it means competitively, but I certainly know what it means for players who are into that idea of creating stuff. StarCraft's done this since the beginning. StarCraft 1 and 2.
But it would blow the game wide open.
Interesting.
And when they release a map editor, I'm not looking forward to... It's not like the StarCraft map editor where it's like they have an arcade and they've got weird modes.
Right.
I'm looking forward to... Like, Blizzard's creatives, when they're making their maps have to really rock. Yeah. And I think that really limits what kind of experimentation they can do in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're just a dude man making a map, or dude woman.
Sure. On the dudes, yeah.
Yeah. Making the map, you could make maps with pits in it, and then you could kick people into the pits, or you could do these crazy experiments that, you know, a company just can't do with its commercial products. And I think that when we look at the history of MOBAs, that came out of modding. And so you've made a game now that, you know, has a history in the modding community. I think it only makes sense, that I don't know why other MOBAs aren't starting to do this either, is to give the community the tools to make awesome maps and then have Blizzard curate the best ones and then make official versions of them, or so, and maybe even compensate those people for their work.
Sure.
So that when we talk about map editors, I talk about making the game even more awesome. And I'm less in, although that the other stuff's cool, like mods that do weird things, like make tower defense. I know you love tower defense.
Oh,
games,
they're my favorite. They're my favorite thing in the world. Let me just set up some towers and have a bunch of shit come in and see if it'll take all the shit down or not. That's a good time, man. Video games 101. What a good time that is.
So if I log into Heroes and I go to the custom, you know, mod area and it's 100, you know, tower defense mods, I'll be very disappointed. That's
me
not
too,
what I
dude.
Wanted.
I hate those.
I just want maps from the community, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I want all the heroes to have the same rules. I don't want you to be able to change how the heroes work, just the map environments, because I'm not even going to say them here, because I have ideas that I want to put down that have never been done in MOBAs before that would really rock.
Well, so that brings me to my big question, though. Let's say you've got these big ideas and they involve some really complicated map objective stuff, like, you know, the way it is now, you got to go down to the mines, get all the skulls, come up and do the thing. And then the dragon one, you got to do the thing, or you got to get the tribute for the curse and all that. Those are very specific programmatic examples of what a map functionally does. It isn't just lanes and it isn't just dudes. Would they have to dumb all this down so that it is just lanes and dudes and can't be any complicated stuff outside of the Blizzard official ones? Or are you looking for full control on that?
I'm looking for like jump pads and teleporters and conveyor belt things and pits. Like,
we may need to buy Bow Mario Maker.
I know. I was just going to say, you were describing Mario Maker, or maybe at least one of the little big planets or something.
Yeah, sure. Like, but why can't we do that for like a MOBA? Like, it's like, well, we can't do that in MOBAs. That's crazy. It's
well,
like, of course we could do, you know, we could have bombs and bullet bills all over.
Well, do you remember? I mean, I think there was a time probably where I think it's sacrosanct because they look at MOBAs and go, well, the map is absolutely key to the flow, to the balance, to the whatever. And Blizzard already kind of farted in the face of that thinking and said, well, we've got 8 of them. How you like them apples? And everyone else is like, well, we have 1, but it's super tuned. So they've already kind of said, well, no, we think you can do more, and they're doing more. I just wonder if that's a bridge too far. John, do you think having a map editor, I mean, at the very least, you could do fun custom games and who cares? There's nothing to lose. But how does this stuff ever get into, like, you know, competitive play?
Yeah, that's kind of the part that gets me. Like, I'm split. So Bo's clearly on the pro side. I'm going to say that I'm on the fence, where there's elements of what he's talking about that I'm really excited for, and there's elements that I'm just like, it just seems like a waste of time. But I think the biggest point that he made that I completely agree with is this notion of this whole genre came out of a Warcraft 3 mod. Who's to say that the next big genre that we're all going to be way into isn't going to come out of Heroes of the Storm mod? I think that's a really cool notion to play with and to check out. The part of me that's kind of against it is just the part of me where it's like, yeah, I feel like for it to come out and actually be good, it's going to take a lot of development time, a lot of energy that I'm not sure I care enough about for them to put the time and effort into it. Or it's going to be so complicated that most of us aren't going to be able to interact with it.
Yeah.
And it'll be for people out there that are good at that sort of thing. And I'm excited to see what they can build and all of that. But then at that point, too, it's no longer a feature I would use.
Yeah, it's like StarCraft maps. The first batch that came out in 1 and 2 was always like this giant thing of, it's just like Overtool 55A, except now there's billions of crystals to farm, or there's 6 Vespene gas plants right behind you, or, you know, ways to just sort of break the game in a fun way, right? I think you'd see mostly that. Now, if Bo's idea of them curating or helping sort of sift the wheat from the chaff a little bit, that could be interesting. I mean, other games that do this are good examples to look at. Like, how are we getting the best? Is the best stuff in the Minecraft community rising to the top? Do people know the best mods for that, or the best maps, or the best whatever?
Look at Warcraft. I mean, you know, a certain percentage of what Warcraft is today is from a percentage of it is from ideas generated by the add-on makers, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That have become staples of playing the game. And I think that, you know, like I talk often about, I think some of the maps are too small. It seems like there's no opportunity cost to mounting up, going to another lane for a gank super easy. And I think some people will make silly maps, and some people will say, I have a better idea about balance, and I'm going to make my weird balance map, and I'm going to get feedback from the community. And maybe there's upvoting and downvoting in what the client looks like. And we fine tune it, and then people hop on. And I mean, that's how the original MOBA map, the Summoner's Rift map, became a thing. So I think there is a small percentage of people who would be really interested in making these balance maps, saying like, Blizzard doesn't know what they're doing, we do.
Yeah.
But Blizzard's still great because they provided us with all the tools and a great product, but we're just going to help them out with the map a little bit.
I could see that, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's something about MOBAs specifically, and I can't even put my finger on why I feel this way. It just feels like I need that thing to be really crafted out. And if they're going to make something goofy like, well, here's temples, and the only difference is all of the health pools or the shrines, health shrines, are they're indestructible and they have triple the health in them. And all of the inner forts, those are going to have 9 billion hit points. They're going to take forever to beat. We're going to mod this map, this existing map, so that it takes 3 hours to win. You know, like that. I see that's usually what people start doing. They start fiddling with numbers. That's like sliders almost, just to see what it does, you know? And I worry that that would be a huge part of what happens, and we'd need a really good way to know if anything was good. Like how many, it's like anything else. How do I know, you know, how do I know which fart app is the best one on iOS or Android?
Well, it's Farting Troll, of course.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course it is. Farting Troll's pretty good. Anyway, it's fascinating. But
I think there's a way. I think Blizzard's a pretty smart company, and I feel like they would figure out a way. Their UI looks really nice, mm-hmm. so you definitely wouldn't want to go to the add-on map and see someone replaced all the assets with pornographic pictures.
Sure.
You know, because that's another thing that happens with modding.
Of course they do, sure. All the fonts get replaced with, like, Comic Sans and things like that.
Right.
Oh, man. God. Jeez, now we're living in a nightmare realm.
Exactly. Porn and Comic Sans, not a good combo, as it turns out. All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about how Blizzard actively this week came out and said, look, we are not only aware of how some maps are snowballing, but we're very interested in figuring out why that is and what can be done about it. So that's interesting. And they're talking about snowballing very early in a game. And they've got a PTR test map on the PTR. And my understanding is there will be a live version of this on the live server, too, at some point, right? Didn't I gather that there was going to be...
Yeah, it sounds like the test map will be there on Tuesday for the actual servers. You could still go into the test map.
But... Yeah, something like that. Anyway, Bo, why don't you explain what they want to do here? It's pretty interesting because we're always complaining that, especially shrines, that thing is just like, bruh! You know, it's over before it starts.
If anybody plays, you know, Hero League and has been getting a few ranks, I would say, like, the average game is under 20 minutes. I'm losing or winning games around the 14, 15-minute mark for a lot of the time. And I think what that has to do with the huge early advantage that you can get by basically respawning very quickly. So the death timers are going to be longer for the first 10 levels. And, like, if you think... that change makes me think of, like, Cursed Hollow, which is a fairly large map. And that first tribute that comes up, one team takes 4 deaths. But then there's that one poke champ that's keeping them from getting the tribute, which, you know, you might arguably say, well, they won the team fight, they deserve the tribute.
Yeah.
And then everyone comes back up in a blink of an eye, and they're already down there with their mounts. And it's like they didn't even die. You know, the poke guy ends up disrupting them long enough for the other team, the one that lost initially, to descend on them with full health and mana to a team that's already taken damage and then win that first tribute.
Sure.
And I think things like that are what can snowball a game.
Yeah. And there's some of the stuff they're talking about. Death timers are longer for the first 10 levels. Every after remains unchanged. So those first 10 levels, they've increased those timers. That's interesting, and that addresses just what you were saying. Experience levels 1 through 14 have been squished so that the stat difference between levels is not as great.
I'm really excited about this. Our whole team, honestly, should be really excited about this, because I don't know if you guys have noticed this for us. We are really strong late game.
Yeah, very much.
We're also, I think, pretty decent early game. But mid-game for us, I feel like we typically have a bit of a tough time in that mid-game area.
Hmm.
So squishing the stats to try and they even use this phrase to have the 1 to 14 feel a little bit more like the, you know, 15 to 20. I'm all for that, because that turns out that's when I'm playing at my best in these games.
Do you think how common do you think that sentiment is, though? Do you feel like we're the, you know, how many teams are like us going, yeah, that we would benefit from that given our play styles?
I don't know. I'd be curious. Yeah. I'd be curious to see, you know, going to some websites that track such things, you can definitely, when I look at my win rates according to what it's tracking, it starts off very high in the early, then drops below 50% for the mid, and then shoots as high as 85% for the late.
Mm.
Which, you know, for me, that's great. That's great news. Yeah. 'Cause basically it's telling me, hey, you're really hoping that games go a while, because that's where you tend to do your best.
Interesting.
The middle area is, and it's noted here in the news item, that the trade advantage is still a decisive aspect of the game. So everyone knows when you're level 8 and the opposing team turns level 10 to just concede any objectives. Concede team fights and go soak,
right.
If you can. And I think There are times also when there are trade advantages at like level 7 and level 13 that maybe we're not being as mindful of when we play as a team, that we just kind of go in and not care. And that's kind of my style. I kind of don't think about these. Whenever my team's like, oh, we have a level disadvantage, don't fight. I'm like, get in there, maggots. Start fighting. I don't want to hear you crying.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a fair point to consider the fact that every team... You just wonder if that is a pretty sweeping blanketed thing to do, though, to squish those levels and then say, all right, that mid game is going to be better for everybody potentially. I don't know. Well, that just seems like a big assumption that they're all kind of doing like we are.
Well, you do hear a lot of that. Like when you lose a big team fight, the first thing that I'm sure a lot of people listening can attest to, you hear people typing in chat or you see people typing in chat is, well, we're 3 levels down. Well, we're 4 levels down. We're 2 levels down. Like, why do we take that fight to begin with? Like, why are we trying to win the game? We should just play passively until somehow our numbers match. Like, that is unintuitive. You should just be going in there and fighting and not worrying about your levels that much.
Sure. Uninstall. So, GG, uninstall. That's what you should be doing.
Yeah.
I'm with John. I am excited about it. And as our, I think our team will benefit from that, but it's an interesting thing. And then finally, trade advantage will still be very decisive aspect of the game to be mindful of. What do you suppose they mean by that?
Well, like I said, like if we're level 12 and they're level 13, and I think it's level 13 to get the level, that they have their level 13 traits. Like the 5 other people on the team now have 5 ways that they have an advantage over the 5 other people. And it's considerable. So it's not only the stat changes are squished, but the traits still are what they are. Right.
They're beefed up to do whatever they're supposed to do. So you may not gain a ton of extra hit points, but you'll still have your trait advantage that you took at level 16 or whatever.
Yeah. And trait advantage is not like, don't fight them. They have their level 13 and we're level 12. It's just, you know, knowing is half the battle. Or is preparation 90% of success?
Preparation is starts with an H. I don't know how it goes.
knowing what
this is the worst. This is the worst G.I. Joe PSA I've ever heard in my life. It's pretty good though. If you go into this knowing that, I mean, I don't know how players are going to know unless they're paying attention. But if they go in going, well, yeah, I
like Kael Thas can now spread his living bomb. So now I need to adjust my play with that information rather than you know, not thinking about it.
Yeah,
so.
Trait changes now. When just a curiosity question: when somebody's playing League or Dota, how do they handle that? Because all their trait stuff is basically the item shop. That's how that works.
Yeah, the items have a huge impact. I mean, the items are essentially what traits are. They kind of change what heroes do in a big way.
And they can only get them when they have enough gold to afford them, right?
Right. So the idea is they're not getting them at set levels. Yeah. They're getting them when they get gold. And you can, in those games, if you push the tab button, just like in our Heroes of the Storm game, you can see what weapons they have.
Yeah.
So it's also prudent in those games to push tab and, oh, the opponent has static shiv, so now I know his wave clear is even more stronger. Better be careful. He's got a ton of critical hit now or something like that. So the same thing. You should be pushing tab and looking at the scoreboard and looking at what you know your teammates are picking for traits as well as your opponents. That information is very important.
Yeah, it feels like there's always that mid-game level 10 where that's the only time I go, oh, they've got ults. Watch out. That's the only time I think about it.
Well, it's the big one. That's definitely the one where you're going to feel it the most because it's a whole nother ability that all 5 members of the team got, and it's a strong ability.
Right.
But, you know, there are certain characters that, you know, just really come alive at levels other than 10 that, you know, knowing that this is a point where they're really going to become strong is important to keep track of.
Yeah.
Kael Thas is like the classic example. When his living bombs can start spreading, that's when you know to like stay grouped up, start running away from the party if you're all grouped up, if you have a bomb on you so you don't spread it to them, that kind of thing.
He makes me mad. I don't like him. All fountains shall burn, Asmodan's cheese strategy. I don't like this. This sounds sucky. So there's a new strategy floating around where Asmodan focuses on wrecking fountains first. He's doing dunks on everyone's fountain, wiping those out so you don't have your quick go back and get your hooch to keep fighting because those are down because Asmodan's a dick. That seems like a strange strat to me, though. Does it really make that big of a difference? I guess early game it would, wouldn't it?
Sure, because one of the things that you end up doing, like level 1, is you play a poke game with the people opposing you in the lane, and then once people get poked down a bit, they go and hit the fountain.
Right.
But what if that fountain's not there? Then they have to either hearth back, and they lose a lot of time doing that, and lane XP, or They're at a health disadvantage right. and they end up dying.
Right.
So
right.
they talked about it a little bit during these European finals where they mentioned that on shrines, one of the big priorities in the early game is to take out the bottom lane fountain. And the reason for that is you know that that bottom shrine is going to come active second, and that's going to be the one that is hotly contested. And if you can remove your team's ability to go back behind the gate and click that fountain, you have an advantage taking that shrine.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you guys suspect they'll do anything about this? I mean, what can you do? Just make them impervious to him unless there's no gate?
So on the Reddit, oh, go ahead, John.
Oh no! If you've got very specifics, I would go with it. I just
wanted
guessing.
To laugh because on the Reddit thread that I found this on, it was a lot of people saying like, "Oh, great, another strategy that's going to make every Asmodan player play badly and not like it's a very niche thing. Like you're going to be taking tower shots. There's going to be opposing people running up to the enemy gate, yeah. launching an orb in, and then lasering it." Unscathed, like uncontested, is not going to happen.
Yeah, you got to wait for ammo to be out at the very least. Hope there's no other resistance and that minions are cleared.
Yeah. And your opponents have to be, rather airheaded, like to not look at their map and be like, "Hey, Asmodan's on the wall." Well, let's just, it's Asmodan. He's not that.
Yeah, but obviously, if somebody's been using it and they're talking about it, well, John, what's your obvious on the surface reason? Do you think either something has to be done, or it's much ado about nothing?
To me, it's just not actually rewarding that much. So the Leoric cheese is the big example that we have to go off of this, where it was a case of him actually winning games for his team.
Yeah.
He was playing the game counter to what the game should be, and teams were winning and benefiting off of it.
Right.
And some people were trying to emulate it poorly and it wasn't working, but it was a big thing. While it is an advantage to knock out your enemy team's fountains, it's not like he's pulling the game by doing this thing. And it is going to cost him something to do it. I just don't think it's going to be that prevalent. And I think you're going to probably see a lot of backlash from same team if they catch Asmodan's off trying it.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably not as big a deal as people think. And I don't
that
think...
That being said... I need to try it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is the kind of thing that makes people want to go try it once or twice.
Yeah.
Just because they were curious, but yeah, it's not going to become the standard mode of play for that character. What was the thing, just for clarification, what was Leoric doing that was driving everybody bonkers?
He would die
yeah.
and just get into the opponent's base
oh.
and just start wailing on their keeps.
Oh, I didn't know that. And then just die again and then do it again.
Yeah,
yeah, like just, until you made the super minions, like the catapults.
Yeah, so he would. We were seeing games where Leoric had died like 68 times, but he had effectively swung the game because he had caused the team to have catapults, and this was back when his skeletal swing had 100% bonus damage to. Structures.
Yeah, I mean, so I remember that. Yeah.
It was very, very powerful, and he'd just die repeatedly and feed experience, but what he was giving in return was actually worthwhile.
I hate that.
It was really bad.
That's super annoying. Reminds me of that healer comp we played that one time. Did they beat us, that whole healer comp?
I was the all specialist comp.
Oh, all specialist comp, and that pissed me off.
I think we won.
Did we?
Oh, well, there's been more than one.
I don't like them.
I think
them.
We lost to one recently.
I don't like those. They bug me. They bug me to no end because I feel like they do. Even if they don't win, they do better than they should.
Well, the idea behind that is kind of like those one-turn kill decks in Hearthstone. The idea is they're ignoring the team fighting.
Yeah.
They're just hitting the buildings and ignoring. So you feel like insulted. You're like, how dare you ignore me?
Yeah.
I'm Tassadar of the Church of Tassadar.
They feel like weird robots that aren't humans. I don't like it. It really does make me mad. So hopefully, I don't know, some of that cheese needs to go away. But
snobs.
I guess that's just players being buttholes. So let's go over some quick PTR changes. Loading screen changes. What are those? What's happening? Are we going to actually be able to chat and stuff? Because I freaking hate the way it works now.
There's no chat, but what you're going to be able to see are player names, their portraits, who they picked.
Oh, good.
And also, I think there's a loading bar for each one. I could be mistaken, but I think that's what I saw.
Okay, so more in line with what other MOBAs have done to kind of keep the loading screen making sense and knowing where people are.
Yeah. So there's a little bit more information on the loading screen.
Yeah.
And you can also single out the person whose computer loaded the slowest and tell them what you think. I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
Thanks a lot for making this load take 7 years.
Yeah. Uninstall, get a better ISP, move out of the country, whatever jerk thing you want to say.
Larrick Von Skysquawk.
Skysquawk? I don't know who that guy is, but man, he's in trouble.
Loading time's awful.
The replays Watch With Others feature, which I've heard a lot of people pretty excited about this idea, and it makes sense to me, especially if you're going to do like post-casting of a game that already occurred. That would be a pretty fun way to for people to do that, to be able to watch that. Those replays so together.
I think the feedback has been screen sharing over Skype or whatever, what have you, is not the greatest way to watch a replay with other people.
Yeah, so they've got to beef that up for sure.
Yeah, and it people does, are doing casting, and so
it does feel like if they want to make as big a splash as possible in the esports very competitive place, they're going to need to provide those kinds of tools as often and as quickly as they can, because that will make or break people's ability to make that an easily coverable game. You don't want a bunch of obstacles to be in the way, like Skype sharing video, which is, you know, as John knows, terrible.
I have experienced it a couple times.
Yeah.
But that's actually exactly, I think you just nailed what my problem with the map editor is. Yeah. Love the idea, but I have like a laundry list of things that I would rather see get worked on before that comes
out. That's a good point. It's the old argument with WoW. It's like, yeah, we'd all love to have aerial fights with our mounts, but I'd really like you to fix these 12 other things
right
first. And I'm kind of with you on that. Anything that goes to them, for example, better sharing screen UI tools or whatever for better esports coverage or whatever, I would put that way ahead of a map editor if it were me. So let's hope they do. Battlegrounds, tri-mode, getting a target dummy. And that's to what? Test DPS? Sounds like a dummy in WoW. You just want to shoot that thing until you see how much hammer or... Hammer,
it's just like
got.
Using the target dummy in WoW with like recount or what's the other one? The counter damage add-on. I don't know.
Sure.
And I've actually tried this out on the PTR, and it's really cool because I've been wondering like how much damage am I doing as Jaina when I get the full combo off. So this is a great tool because now I can actually think about, you know, in a more concrete way what the numbers might
be. It's important to note too, the stuff on the PTR is really great because you can now, instead of just leveling up or resetting levels, you can level up and down incrementally. And you can say, all right, well, if she chooses this trait, how's my damage? Oh, okay, that's pretty good. But what if I chose that trait? And you can knock down a level, change traits, and then go hit the dummy again. It's much, much, much better. In fact, I think what'll end up happening, what will come out of that, is a much more clear idea of actual meta in the game, because it'll be backed up with numbers players can verify themselves and not just go, you know, not trying to do all the math by that, you know, in their heads or however the hell they do it with spreadsheets or other data. Like, that's actually really useful. So
I feel like the way you'd have to do it now is get a buddy and be like, okay, I'm going to shoot you with an icicle or ice bolt or frost bolt.
Yeah.
All right, I shot you. What does your health say? My health says 5,678. Yeah.
Battlefield of Eternity, Immortals stronger after 16 minutes. That makes sense to me. Let's see, Garden of Terror. You guys love that map. The Terror's Overgrowth, which is W when you're the Terror. That's the giant plant you put down that everybody needs to kill. This now disables enemy cores. So not just towers and freaking forts. It shuts down the core. That is huge.
Yeah, that's a really big deal. I think one of the toughest things is sometimes you go in solo with that Garden Terror if you're fighting off another Garden Terror late in the game.
Right.
And so not only are you fighting off four people, but you're taking tower shots. Like, it's basically like wasted Garden Terror if that's what happens. So this should help a little bit.
Not only that, but also there's just going to be a new thing to think about as the other team, because you're going to think, all right, well, you know what, let their Terror go, we've got ours, I think we can ham faster than they can ham.
Sure.
You've got to really think about what that means now, because you don't have a core that's defending itself, not like it used to. So that's a big deal, I think.
Yeah, leaving it alone means you're just surrendering the game too, I think.
That's crazy.
Because also the Terror is getting more health, so I don't know how much what that's going to look like.
Yeah,
but I assume it's going to be a lot harder to kill later in the game, which is kind of good because Garden of Terror matches tend to actually go on for 30 minutes.
Yeah, they're long ones.
Or more. Yeah, they're long. So yeah.
Again, probably why I have my highest win rate on Garden of Terror. Despite not liking that match, I win a lot on that one.
It's because you get because of the late game tactics and stuff, and you're just stronger there. And that's an interesting point. How long? I wonder. I'd be curious to see what like high level play, since they're all those matches are shorter, you know, 20 minutes or less. If Garden of Terror is longer there too, or if it's just us.
You know what? I don't think I see have seen in either of the broadcasts of America's Europe many matches on Garden of Terror,
or any that I can remember.
I can't think of any. Yeah. I can think of all the other maps, but not that one.
Maybe they.
And I think it's because it's way too scrappy, takes way too long, and it's kind of a coin flip sometimes.
Yeah. So well, spread her seed. That's all we know.
Yes.
Her spores. Sorry, they changed it. Got to remember the new one.
It'll always be seeds to me.
Yeah, I'm never changing it.
Sow those oats.
Infernal Shrine's getting a change that I think is awesome. So Punisher health decreased, and that's fine. I don't really care about that so much. But it now leaps to the nearest hero instead of a random one. Oh, Zeus be praised. The problem with that, the reason I think that map is so snowbally, well, one of the reasons, it's not the entire reason. It's also kind of compressed, and it's just a weird thing. But the fact that he can go to randoms means that you better not have squishies anywhere near the fight. And that means you're not fighting. It means you're not really helping, because if he leaps to Jaina, Jaina's probably going to die.
Yeah.
And if it's random, there's nothing you can do about it. If you can now coordinate and say, all right, these two tanks in our comp here, you guys stay up close to the dude, to the bruiser, and we'll stay back and we'll be able to cast from back here. Yeah. Like
the
it changes the whole thing.
Tanks can actually kite the Punisher.
Yeah, exactly. And take all the damage and let healers heal him. And at least on paper, I don't know in practice, we'll see if it's as fun, but I think that is a much less like just chaotic mess every time somebody gets one of the Punishers loose.
I think it's good because I think it changes the strategy and the advantage of the Punisher from like what it currently is, which is like, oh, we got a Punisher helping us now,
yeah,
to now the real advantage of the Punisher is you're going to force the other team to be busy coordinating this thing back behind their gates so they can down it faster.
Yeah.
And that frees you up to do kind of whatever you want while they have to worry about it.
Yep. And you also have to kill 40 of the skeletal defenders.
Yeah, skeletal crew.
Skeletal crew, yo. Represent 40 of those instead of 30. And they do burn down real quick, so I'm not surprised that number got bumped. And then in Sky Temple, no more 3-Peter shrine activations.
That's right.
So that part of the game where you're like, well, I guess we just lose because we were kind of not doing so great, and now there's 3 shrines. And
yeah.
So that being the case, you might actually be able to flip some games in your favor.
Yeah, that seems like a good way to deal with that. Big hero changes. Misha fixed the fixate option, which is on keyboards, option one or the
it's
one button.
Button one, yeah.
Yeah, the fixate on a spot or an enemy, Misha's leash range has been significantly increased. Misha will now hide when Rexxar is hidden in a bush. Spirit swoop, power reduced, talent increased damage versus non-heroic targets. Big changes to, well, we knew we'd see some stuff for Rexxar and Misha because that's a weird-ass character anyway.
Yeah, yeah, and it was frustrating because I kind of like the idea that Misha has a mind of her own,
yeah,
but it was difficult. Sometimes I wanted to move Rexxar around, but I didn't necessarily want, you know, Misha can still keep chewing on Leoric's leg. And now you can do that with Fixate. You can just say, all right, just keep chewing Leoric's leg,
yeah,
and I'm going to go over here and pick some berries.
Yeah.
And that's all good. And you can pick berries farther away because the leash range is increased.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like people are hard on Rexxar because we don't quite yet know what to do with him. That's all, you know?
Well, he can solo bosses. There's nothing worse than it's like level 8 and all of a sudden there's a boss up and you have no idea.
Yeah, you hear schling kling and he's coming down. That sucks.
Yep.
I don't like that. So. Zeratul had his void prison range reduced by 50%. Thank the Lord on high for that one. I'm sick of Zeratul put me in a void prison.
Jack. Yeah, so Void Prison is super powerful.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal to take. Stuns tend to take one person out of a fight, maybe two. This just you basically decide like often it's used to either isolate an easy target. Like if there's Jaina and her 4 teammates are there, you throw the Void Prison on the 4 teammates, kill Jaina.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have a huge advantage. Or if a healer's ulting. So Malfurion gets in there, everyone's starting to get low. Void Prison, Malfurion, clean up the team.
Yeah.
And so he's almost an auto pick. I know in Hero League, I think he has a high win rate and high pick rate, which is why they've targeted him for nerfs.
Yeah.
And it's not a really, I don't know. We'll see if this is a big nerf because you can blink in. So if I just have to blink in, then Void Prison, I think that's still okay.
Well, and so. You, but you now have it takes longer, 2 seconds instead of 1. So,
well, that's the wormhole activation. So wormhole is a trait for blink.
Oh, okay. I thought so it was the same thing.
Yeah. It allows you to blink back. So now you have less time to blink back.
All right. That makes sense. Yeah. But kind of, it's just the wormhole ability in Diablo with the what you call them, wizard does that as well. He has a wormhole rune. Same idea, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go, Zeratul, you jerk. Back off, buddy. And then finally, Nazebo Spider's build has had its damage reduced. That's great to hear, dude. I'm sick of those things nipping at my feet. I hate them.
I've been playing a build in anticipation of this. I've been playing without taking the spider traits. Nazebo's just as... like, this is almost a non-change. If you're a hardcore Nazebo player, you're going to be fine.
Still feel like he is a threat then, yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
A few other things happened today. This is kind of a big deal. The Lieutenant Morales trailer, which I played a clip of at the top of the show today, dropped today. So that I think that pretty much seals the deal that they are not going to delay, that we will get her on Tuesday. For me, she's a must-buy. What did you think of the trailer, though? It wasn't that great. It was okay.
A little generic. We're maybe starting to see the effect of 3 weeks to Hero.
Yeah.
Where some of the trailer's charm and personality has maybe gone down a little bit. I don't want to sound too critical about it because I still thought it was a good trailer and I still think they've done some good ones, but I feel like from about the Monk on, we've kind of had some real just generic Hero trailers.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And it's not so much that... well, I think you're right. The cinematics team, they have only so much time, right? And they got to make something pretty compelling in a very quick amount of time. The quicker they release these heroes, the faster this happens. I think we kind of skipped past it, but there was a note here from Matt Cooper from the team who says, we have a list, and it's literally a list of 200-plus characters. 200 characters being worked on right now. That is insane. I don't even know if we can even start to guess who's on the docket.
Well, sure you could. Throw out a name. It's probably on there. There's 200 people on there.
Deckard Cain.
On the list. Actually, they have confirmed on the list.
Oh, they have. He's on the list? He's happening.
Yeah, on the list.
Okay, let me throw another one at you. Tell me if he's on there. Here goes. Khadgar.
Probably on the list.
Okay. Yeah. Iron Docks guy. What's his name? The World of Warcraft character, bad man with a big hammer and flaming stuff. I can't think of his name.
Blackhand. Probably on the list.
Okay. Probably all of them, now that I think about it, are on the list. Durotan's probably on there. Or Durotan, yeah.
Yeah, probably on the list. Or Skin.
Okay, fair enough. Yogg-Saron.
Probably on the list.
No, they're not going to do Yogg-Saron.
What if Yogg-Saron's ultimate was to suck you in and you had to go and defeat all the weird dreams in there or whatever?
I can actually see Ulduar being a really cool map for World of Warcraft.
Dude, yeah. They need to
make Yogg-Saron right in the middle lane. He comes up.
Yep.
The people who didn't activate him have to go in and do a fight.
Yep.
It's like the mines.
This is what they're going to do. So, okay, if they do that map editor, Bo, it kind of goes back to that. People are going to try to recreate their favorite Blizzard things.
Yeah.
And absolutely. That's a pretty cool idea, but doesn't Blizzard want to be the ones that do that? And maybe they still will, you know?
Well, I think the problem is that they have qualities. They have to meet quality standards, whereas if you're just a dude, you can just start by saying, well, I made this initial 0.1. Let's see what people think. Let's get feedback. And maybe people are like, man, I love this. Let me help. I have art to contribute. And
yeah.
So it's just a different way to develop that isn't better or worse than the Blizzard way. But yeah. I think... it's kind of free. Like Blizzard doesn't have to, you know, pay for this crowdsourcing. And it also just helps, I think, keep people invested in Heroes and not go to other places.
Yeah. We'll see how much freedom they give us. Like adding your own art and stuff. I'm not sure they're going to go that far. If anything, I'm guessing it's like StarCraft where you've got access to all the tile sets and objects that they'll let you use and triggers and everything. And then
I think it'd be fine if they took it slow. The map editor was like very restricted at first and they slowly.
Yeah. Like everything else. It's just what they do. They put out the polished working thing and then they can iterate. That's fine with me too.
Yeah.
Before we move on to some phone calls and emails, I had to play this. This is the sound of Bo Schwartz, our own Bo Schwartz, palming me in a cave. That sounds terrible, but this is why that ultimate with Jim from Utah, aka Karazim, is so amazing. So here's just a little audio of a game we played.
I got you, yes, go in,
yeah, dude, that's how you use healing palm or whatever.
Yeah,
no way.
You PC, bro?
That was one of my favorite moments in the game that I've ever had.
I had a good surge of adrenaline going because I was really trying to get with you so I could put my palm on you.
Right. John's like,
I'm in high school all over again.
Yeah, I know, and, right?
And, you know, we successfully got it off.
And, it was amazing.
And we had, like, we were just, like, so, like, buzzed. And we turned, not only that, but you were being chased by three people. I think you turned around or killed one or two. And then the rest of the team, as a result, came in and cleaned everything up.
Yeah,
and
we won. We basically won that game based on
that. We got 100 Skull Golem because we didn't lose that fight.
Yeah.
Because of that palm. Like, your health bar was literally poisoned. Like, it was an envenom damage.
Yeah,
and gone. You were guaranteed dead. And I dashed, palmed. And we broke their hearts and yelled like crazy bros.
That was really great. And then I'm pretty sure that pivoted the entire match. I really felt that way. At the end of it, it felt like that was a turning point.
Like, that is a reason to love playing Heroes, are those moments of, you know, sheer just, wow.
Yep. What other game can you know, first-person shooters do this a lot, but if you're playing a competitive game in 15-minute, 20-minute increments, it's very rare for you to come away with, like, that kind of stuff on the regular basis, and that's totally what this game is. Partly why we love it so much, everybody. That's the truth. Now I've lost my place. Where are we now? Oh, how about this? I don't know. How about this?
Hey, Scott. And everybody. It's Nate from Northern Illinois. You guys are talking about classes and heroes. So let's just go with Tassadar. Why couldn't you just pre-select support or assassin or whatever his other moniker would be once you select the character? So, like, if you're doing a quick match, you would select Tassadar and support so that they knew that there was at least one support in there, or assassin, because you know that you're gonna build them to do damage, not do heals. Love the show.
Now, well, he got cut off at the end. I'm gonna actually go in support of the opposite of this, because what I don't want to have happen is pre-match people making decisions that could change mid-play. You don't always know, like in Quick Match, you don't know what your map's going to be. It's random, it pops, and you don't know until, they may change that, but right now you don't know that. So if it's Shrines, oops, I shouldn't have picked the damage build, I should have picked the healing build. I think that's a poor way to make that decision. I'd much rather have levels come and trait options come up as I'm playing and go, you know, we're doing pretty good with this full healer and then me kind of a semi-healer, I think I'm going to go damage, and I can make that decision kind of on the fly as we've gone, and I don't have to commit to anything too early. You know, Jim from Utah being the only real exception to that. But, with, you know, and not even that big of one, but, you know, he gets to choose kind of which path he wants to take at the beginning, and it sounds like they want to keep that pretty unique to him. So I don't like this idea. John, what do you think of the idea of pre-selecting your role that you intend to play before the game even rolls?
I was kind of all for it until I thought about it.
Yeah.
And then once I thought about it, I thought of all the problems and ways you control people by doing it. So part of the reason why people don't like the classification of Tassadar is because he is listed as a support, but he's not a very healy support. And the way the matchmaking in the game is set up is to where it just recognizes, does this team have a support? If yes, then let's put them against a team that will also have a support. And then the problem is that you get a team that has a Tassadar who doesn't feel like a full support, and they get stuck against an Uther who's the best healer in the game right now, and they have to go against each other. And the problem that, so that's the problem. And initially I kind of like the idea of, oh, well, I can just say I don't intend to play him as a support, but I don't feel like that's a good attitude to go into a match with.
Yeah.
At the same time, you need to be able to adapt to what your team is, and what your comp is. So if you say, well, no, I'm going in as an assassin, and then you don't get a support, your team's going to want you to take those support talents. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you pre-selected it, it kind of puts you in this mentality of, no, I said I was going to be an assassin. That's what I'm going
to
be.
Well, and you also want to be able to adapt to whatever the other team does. You may know exactly what your comp wants to do, but halfway through that game, you may have to turn a corner and go, no, we got to go this other way now, guys, because, you know. So I just don't like being locked in on anything and not being able to do anything about it. Sounds like not fun gameplay to me.
It also lets trolls check, hey, I'm going to be a support, and then not. decide to play a support
yeah.
and mess up the matchmaking that way as
that's
well.
That's a good point. Why aren't we working there? Bo, your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I think people, are, if they come in with a preconceived plan, they just do it anyways. There was a gym in a recent match I played that said, I'm going DPS, and he was last pick in the draft, and nobody picked a healer.
Yeah.
and he just still went DPS. Yeah. Like, and, you know, we ended up winning that game anyways, and nobody made a big deal about it. But if you just want to, you can pre-build by just going in and telling everybody, I'm picking this stuff, and I don't care what you have to say.
Right. And it's the same effect, really.
That's, there's like, that's a, I don't recommend playing that way personally, and I don't think you can make a lot of friends playing that way, but you can do that. You're free to do that.
Sure, but then now the rest of your team is still free to make other changes based on you being a dumbass. So you could say,
sure.
Well, yeah, he's already told us he's going to be a jerk and do his thing, so how about you do this now instead? I mean, you can still up for him by being fluid yourself.
Like, I guess some of what the question was too, though, like if we pre-pick these things, yeah. then the matchmaker can put us into more balanced teams, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a legitimate thing to want more about. Like, you don't want to end up on the 4-tank team where the other team has like a super balanced composition. You're like, what's going on with matchmaker? I don't put some of the tanks on the other team, and that right. You know. And I think Blizzard is not the heroes. You know, team one, right?
Yep.
They're not. You know, they don't want to come out and say these are the roles and these are the. That you have to have for a team composition. I think they're letting the community sort these things out.
As they should. Let us do it.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
If they put that in the game, then they're condoning, you know, certain types of play. I don't think they want to do that.
I completely agree.
Hey, Scott. My name is Richard, otherwise known as XSushi on Twitter. I'm calling from Los Angeles. I'm a longtime Instance fan and listener that shares your enthusiasm for Heroes of the Storm. I have the hots for hots. Like you and everybody. I don't know what's happening. I'm having the hot splashes. And I'm wishing you all the very best with your new podcast. I love this game. September 26th is the perfect day to launch this podcast. It's the anniversary of Abbey Road, which the first track is Come Together, which is what I feel like the Nexus has done for me and my friends who have played so many different games over different servers across time and space, and this game has brought us all together. So for that reason, I want to give a quick shout out to my gang squad, my brother Ifer Santep, my Nexus life partner Malrog, my buddies Dark Omen and Dromus, and my two very best friends Fathom and Raiden, who will be with me watching the World Championship of HOTS in BlizzCon 2015. Once again, to you and your new co-host or an old co-host, or I don't know the co-host yet. I didn't listen to the whole thing. Sorry, I'm a bad person. All the best in the show. Yay, hot splashing.
All right, that guy's really excited about HOTS, as you can tell. I decided,
drugs are bad, okay?
Yeah. I tried to look up the origin and meaning of the word Come Together, the song.
Right.
Just to kind of make sure. And this is what was said by, let's see, song written by Lennon, inspired by Timothy Leary's campaign for governor of California and against Ronald Reagan, which promptly ended when Leary was sent to prison for possession of marijuana. He says this, John Lennon, of that song. The thing was created in a studio. It's gobbledygook. Come Together was an expression that Leary had come up with for his attempt to be president or whatever he wanted to be, and he asked me to write a campaign song. I would do the accent if I could, but I can't. I tried and tried, but I couldn't come up with one, but I came up with this, Come Together, which would have been no good to him. You couldn't have a campaign song like that, right? So that's the meaning of that song. I think we've assigned more to it than there was actually there. But yeah. I did want to speak to the point that Heroes has done this weird thing in the existing Blizzard gaming enthusiasts, which was give us something we can all come together and do in groups that almost fills the hole of what raiding used to fill. I still like raiding, but, you know, kind of waiting for expansions or, you know, you're up and down on raiding. But this is like it's a 15 to 20 minute raid every game. And
yeah,
I just love that. I love that about it.
I think there's, you know, you bond with, like, board games are making a resurgence as well. Like, I think you bond with people when you play games together with people. Yep. And, you know, there's plenty of video games that are single player experiences or, you know, you can spend a lot of time, you know, solo questing in Warcraft even. Right. And yep. not interacting. And I think this game demands, you know, a lot of cooperation and teamwork, and you form very strong relationships with people, win or lose. I think that way. So I love this guy's email. I love the energy of it. And I love the fact that you know, it's like trying to make these like stretchy connections between things. It's really cool. The universe is a wonderful place.
I kind of agree.
He's excited, and I'm excited that he's excited.
Me too.
So
man.
It's good. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll come together. No, you know what? There's great inventions of the world. They have bad origins, but if they become good, then we're happy with
it. Yeah, and so. just because, you know, sometimes John Lennon was a little sardonic, sarcastic, and irritated with his own career doesn't mean that song doesn't have some meaning for somebody, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I like the idea that this show came together because of Heroes. I like the idea that our friendship as a threesome sprang directly from this game.
I love you guys.
I mean, I knew John before. I didn't really know you at all, though. And all this stuff just kind of convoluted. Like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes I should kiss Blizzard Blizzard on the lips.
All right. You know,
Lizard on the blips is what I almost said.
Yeah. Lizards on the blips.
I have one. You get arrested for that, like marijuana.
We'll do a Kickstarter.
Here is a call that it makes no sense to me. So you guys can help me decipher it. Here you go.
This is Evren. I had a quick question here. Jim from Utah, would that be James T. Kirk we're speaking of? All right. Good show, guys. I enjoyed the first episode. See you next week. Bye-bye.
I don't get it.
Hold on. James T. Kirk isn't from Utah.
No, he's not. William Shatner's nowhere from near here.
Well, William Shatner's a Canuck, but...
But then the character's from Iowa, right?
Yeah, he's from Iowa. Yeah.
So I don't know where he got that from.
Different Jim. A lot of Jims out there. Someone else pointed out to me this week that there's also a Jim Rayner. So,
oh, right.
You know, I'm saying Jim all the time. They're like, are you talking about Rayner? It's like, no.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows why we call him Jim. I'm not even 100% sure why we call him Jim. Because
his name is Karazim.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And if you take Zim, like, it's a Johanna, but we all say Johanna. Yeah. So you could just say Jim. Like
Jim.
Kara Jim.
Kara Jim, and then Utah is from Itar, or Fort Itar, he always says.
Itar or Utah.
Yeah, from Utah. I'm from Utah. My name is Jim. I'm from Utah.
Basically, yeah. We're bad at listening
and
saying stuff.
That's exactly right. Those calls came to us at 801-471-0462. Please keep them flowing. We also have an email here that was sent to us at core@heroesforyou.com. That's core@heroesforyou.com. That's not a number four. That's an F-O-R in the middle there. Hello, core crew. I deeply enjoyed the debut episode of the show. One topic that creeps up in talking Heroes, even on the instance, is what aspects of other MOBAs should be worked into Heroes. One part close to me is the idea of banning Heroes, which is something that had me stop playing Hero League. League, he means League of Legends. LOL is already a long game, but banning phase and draft just made it longer. But my greater frustration is when it dawned on me that I had paid for the heroes that were frequently banned. So this goes back to the point we were trying to make earlier. League of Legends and Heroes are games such that you are best served learning to play a few characters really well. That's a very odd sentence. And you get to higher level play. I was often in ranked games playing characters I knew very poorly, which is no fun, or I play a quick match, which was also no fun, with disconnects and trolls aplenty. No game can ever hope to be perfectly balanced, but it is often the imbalances and creative combinations that can translate into the most fun. Again, I think we were saying that earlier. Let folks make tournament banning informally, but why would I play yet another game that takes away from my ability to play my favorite characters and ones I paid for with both money and time? We have a MOBA that you can micromanage this aspect, and Heroes doesn't need it. Sincerely, Dan. I don't think this is our Dan, by the way.
No,
that would be funny.
It's Dan from Utah.
Yeah, Dan from Utah. Iktar. So we've talked a little bit about banning, but what do you think of the idea that it's not going to help the game? It would make it worse.
I really like a lot of what Dan had to say. I'm definitely of the sentiment that, you know, yeah, you don't want to buy, if you come to the game later, 120 heroes just so you make sure you have a hero to play. But at the same time, if you're playing ranked modes, you shouldn't be playing any characters you want to play. I think anybody who's playing draft, whether there's bans or not, sometimes you have to play supports. You need to learn some supports. You need to learn some other heroes, and you need to learn some, you know, assassins and tanks. Like, your approach to a ranked mode has to be more disciplined than I'm just going to play what I want, because that is not the way to approach a ranked mode. I think in any game, you're playing to get the most win advantage. Mm-hmm. So your decisions are based that way. Mm-hmm. So I think you know, whether you're banning or not, if you, you do, you are going to have to accept some lack of control over playing what hero you want.
Well, especially when there's potentially hundreds of heroes, because then your imbalance issues become a real problem. And do you think, how is it decided in League of Legends? When I go get into a ranked match, or however it works over there, that isn't quick, whatever the quick play equivalent is, how is a ban decided upon? Do people vote, or is it just an automatic thing?
I think it's usually the first player, like, you know, you have your five people all lined up on the side.
Yeah.
I think the top person just picks the three for your team, and then on the other team, the top player picks the three. And people will type in chat, like, ban this person, ban this person. But ultimately, that first player gets the deciding vote on all of
it. And there's probably some commonly held characters that everybody thinks should be banned right now.
Sure. Well, just like in Heroes, there's a meta, and people ban out the irritating ones unless someone's like, I'm going to pick it, so don't ban it. And, you know, like, there's a strategy around it. Like, I totally get what this person's saying. I buy a hero. I want to be able to play them.
Yeah.
That's what your casual modes are for. I think if you're, you know, it's just like, it's just like playing your own deck in Hearthstone. It's gonna, you can play it all the way to rank one or whatever, but it's not gonna be as good as someone just doing the face hunter.
Yeah, thing. And they are talking about banning decks, not decks, but cards and perhaps decks, I guess, as that game also grows. So the bigger Hearthstone gets, the more they're gonna have to get to that place that Magic does in a real world setting on a table, where they'll ban old cards and say, sorry, that's no longer allowed in this tournament or whatever. So even they will have to face that. My thinking is, you already kind of face this in ranked anyway. You play Hero League now, and you have to, you may or may not get to play Jaina if she's your favorite, because they may choose her and there's no mirroring. So you already kind of have a form of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely, like, can happen. If you're like, I was pretty much exclusively playing Jaina when I got to the higher levels.
Yeah.
And then if the opposing team took Jaina, or someone else on my team took Jaina, I was like, darn it, I'm not as good with the other heroes.
Yeah.
So I've been forcing myself to just play support. I've been playing a ton of support. A week ago, we were talking about heroes, and I was saying, I hate playing support. I never want to play it. I've been playing pretty much 90% support heroes.
That is so funny. Jim from Utah had a real effect on you.
He sure did.
All 900 of his gods. John, any thoughts on that? The whole panning controversy?
No, I really just kind of agree with what you all said. It has its place. Yeah. And I think as long as Blizzard introduces it in the right place, that's all that matters. It belongs in the highest echelons of play.
Yeah.
But as you go up the ladder, as you graduate from cooperative to quick to ranked to tournaments, you know, whatever you want to say is above that, eventually you stop picking what you want, and you start picking to win.
Yeah.
And bans are a part of that. So I definitely like everything that Dan had to say.
Yeah.
I completely agree, but it does eventually have its place. Yeah. And that's, I'm sure, where they will introduce it. I don't expect to see bans in quick match.
Yeah. And if this is Dan Patrice, our healer that plays with us occasionally, F off. Just kidding. We love you, Dan.
We love your healing. That's what he meant to say.
Don't ditch our healers. Scott.
Yeah, please. I got to be careful with that. Please
ignore Scott.
Yeah, ignore me. Please call in. Leave us messages like the ones we've done and read here today. 801-471-0462 or email us core@heroesforyou.com. A quick note. We're putting together a little project, a little piece that we want to have on the show coming up. And we need you to help us do that. What we're looking for is people to send in voice recorded reasons they love heroes. Try to keep these short. We don't need like 3-minute diatribes, but, you know, whatever's in your heart, whatever's in your gut, that's what we want to hear. And specifically, we want you to mail them, okay? Email them, not mailbox. Yeah, mail them.
Important distinction.
Yeah, that's really important. We live in the modern era. Send it to core@heroesforyou.com. Same email address I've been piping off this entire time. That's core@heroesforyou.com. And send them via your phone's memo apps. No matter what you're using, whether it's a third party or the built-in ones, any of your Android or iOS phone or your Windows phone or whatever, we want you to record them there, primarily for good quality. Maybe listen to what you did after, make sure you didn't put too many P's in the p in there or something like that. And send them in. We're going to put together a little piece that we don't want to give too much away about, but we need your help to do it. So again, send us your short, interesting, fun thoughts about what the game means to you and why you love it to core@heroesforyou.com. And I don't know how long we'll be running this, but I guess it depends on how quickly you guys get your stuff in. So get on it. Any other thoughts on that, Bo? I know
Nope, we just want to hear your passion. Yeah. The reason we're doing this show is I play the game every day, and we love talking about it all the time, and we know you do too. So we feel what you feel. So channel that in your little minute where you tell us what the core reason is you love it.
Exactly. And if there's any confusion about how you get a hold of us or find us, heroesforyou.com has got all that you need. Join us at /frogpants in the game. Just /frogpants. Join that group. Lots of players, people, listeners. We play with you all the time too, so we're always looking for fill slots when there's less of us. So look for that, and we're happy to be in there chatting with you. core@heroesforyou.com is the email address. Once again, 801-471-0462 is our phone number. Find us all on Twitter, Bo Schwartz, John_Jagger, Scott Johnson, and the show at Core Heroes. It's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next week. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.